Welcome back to the Experiment Now This Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. I'm your host, Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And this week we have a special guest. You may have seen him throughout the interwebs, providing all things knowledgeable regarding Drukhari. Matter of fact, he's doing a long time back when they were called Dark Eldar. He was in the ITC top 10 leading into LVO and is the pride of Canada, no matter what Val Heffelfinger tries to tell you. Welcome Archon Skari to the show.
Kaboom. Exterminatus time.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Super excited to have you here. And so let's get right into the news. Thoughts on the new Chaos Space Marines. We got new Abaddon. I got a Warp Smith on a mini Mauler Fiend riding that into battle. What do you guys think?
The Lord Discordant or Discordant. He looks awesome in my opinion. I love the feel they're going for with the new Chaos like series of miniatures, and we're now adding in things like the new Terminators that they teased today and like some Black Legion rules that they teased. I'm excited. I think my Shadow Spear box set is waiting to be painted in Chaos-y stuff too.
And we've got a call writing call there with the new Lord.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it actually.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned the Shadow Spear waiting to be painted. Our co-host Don was on the I saw him on Friday night, waited till midnight, and sure enough, picked up his Shadow Spear. And then he was over at my house at 9 a.m. the next morning, and he had built all his Greater Possessed, all his Obliterators, as well as the Master of Possessions. I was like, you, sir, are a hobby titan.
I call dedication.
I mean, I was just like, you've got to be kidding. I was like, they look awesome in person. And they do hit hard. A lot of people were kind of debating back and forth because the Obliterators went from a unit of three to a unit of two, but they hit just as hard. They upped the number of shots. They upped the profile. It's something to be reckoned with. And now, like you said, the new Black Legion, as well as it looks like some of the other Chaos chapters or legions will be getting a little bit of love as well. This new Vigilus book will offer quite a bit.
We're getting the new Vigilus book. We're getting the revamped Chaos Codex that has all the Vigilus stuff in it, as well as all the chapter proof changes and the new data slates, like data sheets and whatnot. I'm excited to see what things get cooked up, and who knows, hopefully that terrain piece, the cool webway, the cooler chaos gate thingy is pretty neat as well.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because when they originally teased there would be a chaos terrain thing, I was like, I mean, like that throne corn thing for Age of Sigmar, they're just going to recycle that. Well, they are recycling that, but they added another piece. I'm like, what is that thing? So I'm super excited to find out what that thing does.
It's the Stargate of Chaos.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It does look like that.
Yeah, it's like a Stargate.
Yeah, it does look like a Stargate. I have to say, though, you hit it right on the head. One thing that really hit home, and this is gets for all the listeners, even if you're not a Chaos Space Marine fan, which how could you not be? But anyway, if you're not and you're like, why do I care? There's this interesting diagram very similar to, do I use an index rules or codex rules? It Games Workshop flat out said, hey, look, if you already own the Chaos Space Marine Codex, buy the Vigilus book and you can download the data slates from our website once it comes out. You don't need to buy a new codex. I was like, what? Holy cow.
It's like moving into the 21st century. I love it.
I was shocked. I'm just, having played this game for so long, they surprise me every day with what's going on.
It's a never-ending deluge of amazing content, amazing miniatures. It's hard to keep up, but at the same time, I rue the day of back in the day when I waited 13 years for a new codex.
Amen. Nothing was worth then. Oh, they're coming out with a new edition this year. We're looking at two codices, and one of them is going to be Space Marines. Whoopee.
Yep.
11 years for, and those are not exaggerations. Check out those copyright dates. Necron players, I feel for you. Good Lord, that was terrible. I mean, you know, there was always like, those two or three armies that, yeah, you're going to take this edition off. So I like the rapid pace. It is hard to keep up. And at times, But then you have like the last 2 or 3 weeks, we had a lot of Necromunda and Blood Bowl to kind of get you caught up. So I'm okay with it. I think this is awesome.
Yeah, the new Ambots and the Amble that they released earlier, and like, you know, they tease the new Commissar with the Power Fist and the Chaos Ogryn for Blackstone Fortress.
And that is like, an amazing model. I unbelievable. The scarring on the guy's face, the chaos symbol is like bleeding out of his face. I was like, what is that?
Chaosy.
Oh, just really amazing. So all exciting news when it comes to new models. I do have to take a quick detour to Bummerville, but it's an opportunity for the community at large to rally. So Ray and I's home store, and also where Don and our team practices, over the weekend at Imperial Outpost Games here in Glendale, Arizona, unfortunately was the victim of a break-in. And they suffered quite a bit of loss in terms of both financially as well as damage to the property. They're being strong supporters and have already reopened to their fans and to their players. But let's be honest, it's going to be a while before insurance kicks in. So now's a great opportunity for our local community to help them out. So with all these new releases coming out, head on down and make a purchase. If you've been saving up, especially the discount cards for larger purposes, now would be a good time to go down and just pick something up. Even simple things like paints, every dollar counts. Let's support the store. Imperial Outpost has been a pillar for the Arizona community when it comes to 40K. They need our help. So if you guys can get down there in the next 2 weeks to support them by just simply making a purchase, eschewing probably some online discounter, they could really use it this week. It's been a rough week for them. It feels like, you know, our home almost has been robbed as well. And that's a good opportunity for us to give back and help to support the store there. So kind of a bummer news to happen from there. And it was that Saturday night. So they had just, you know, raked in all the sales from Shadow Spear, then have it all taken away like that. It's kind of rough.
Yeah, that's rough. You know, and those community stores, you know, that's what drives our community forward. So anything you can do to help your local store, keep it around, have a place to play, you know, that they're the guys that drive the hobby forward and allow us to have that space for us to play. So
appreciate that. So we're going to take a quick break. And after that, we have two GT level events to talk about and go over that. One from across the pond, and the Warhammer World had their big event. We'll be talking about that right after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. We had two GT level events over the past weekend. We start in the deep south here in Alabama at the Visions of the Grim Dark. Let's look at your top eight. Looks something like this. In eighth place, we have Seth Oster with Orcs. Seventh place, Richard Martin coming in with Tau Sept. Sixth place, William Saunders doing his best Richard impression, playing Tau Sept as well. Fifth place, people say that Zach Barton must be crazy because he came in fifth place with Necrons. And fourth place, Andrew Ford playing Imperial Knights, which I believe is a new army for him. I have to double check. I could have swore he was Imperial Guard. Third place, Richard Siegler with Tau Empire again. So lots of Tau down in the south. Second place, we had Daniel Hesters with Imperial Knight. And your leader for the particular event, the Pride of Florida, none other than John Lennon with Gene Stealer Cult. We did double check the records. He was playing Tyranids at LVL, so he's gone full tilt, Gene Stealer Cult, with the new release. And he went 4-0-1 over the weekend. So congratulations, John. And Scar, you said you have the results from across the pond at Warhammer Land.
That is correct. So Games Workshop had their grand tournament final. So they do the heats throughout the year. And then the top, I believe, 30 players go, or maybe a little bit more than that. But we had top eight was... In eighth place, we had Kevin Hughes with a mixed Imperium list. Marco Franza with Mixed Chaos, Alex Heap with Mixed Imperium, Dan Cook in fifth with Mixed Eldari, Patrick Sanfilippo with Adeptus Astartes. In third place, we had the famous Lawrence Baker with his Mixed Eldari. In second place, Eddie with his Gene Seal Cults. And in first place, we had Simon Pridis with Tau. And I believe he had a few piranhas in there.
What? Heresy. What if there's piranha anymore?
But he had a total value of enemy units destroyed over the course of, I believe it was six games, right? Yes. He had, so six games at 2,000 points, right? That's a total point value that he played against of, was it 14,000 points? 2,000 points times six. Yeah, 12,000 points. He basically killed almost 10,000 points of enemy units. And he had the highest point value of enemy killed out of the whole tournament, which means he damn near almost tabled everybody he
played.
That's
insane. Yeah. When you think about that too, over six rounds. So yeah, he's at 10,000 points. He only pays 12,000 points. So yeah, he killed 80% of the models face. And you figure it got tougher as the round, so that means his probably his first three rounds he tabled every opponent. Oh my god!
But Tau are definitely in a position right now, I feel, where you know they've got a good book. You just need a good general behind the wheel, and they have the tools to do some work at a competitive level.
I would agree. I had not played Tau in 8th edition until this past week, and I played them three games in a row. And I was like, okay, here we go. And the first list was not optimized, and he's a nice guy, a nice player, and not a tournament goer. And a matter of fact, that was my first foray into the chapter approved missions. And he just had a difficulty, kind of castled up and waited too long to go after objectives, so he fell behind in that game. But they had a ton of firepower, and it was okay. So I was like, I think I got my feet wet. And then Saturday. Went up against one of our guys from our team, and he had the triple Riptide list. And there's always that voice that says in the back of your head, maybe you should just hide for five turns. Let's see. But for whatever reason, I said, well, I've got a close combat army. I guess I need to venture forward eventually. And what a mistake. I mean, people claim, you know, that the Markolites are not what they used to be. Well, they're not, but they're still highly effective. And, he just tore my army apart. And this is an opponent I usually do fairly well against. So either he's starting to unlock the secrets or there's something to be said here. And then my other matchup was against a Dark Angels player who took advantage of the new beta bolter rules. So I'm like going, what is going on here?
There's a lot of dice coming your way is what.
Yeah, and you start discounting that re-rolling once, well... You know, 36 shots, that's six extra hits, so or six extra rerolls at least. So it's be aware of it. So it was interesting. And I was taking my LVO list, and I was kind of joking. It's my answer. My list is the answer to a question no one's asking anymore. So. So, Scar, what... the list you've been running has been pretty consistent. Want to tell us a little bit what you've been running lately?
For my competitive ITC list, I've been running Drukhari, pure Drukhari. And it's a three detachment force. So I have a Homunculus Prophets of Flesh battalion with Uri and Rakarth and a Homunculus. Three units of five racks. A unit of seven Grotesques and two units of three Talos with Haywire Blasters, Chain Flails, and Macro Scalpels. That's essentially the core of the list. And the rest sort of goes around that. I have the obligatory Archon with Black Heart Ravagers and Disintegrator Cannons. And then to round it off, I have three Flyers. I have a Void Raven Bomber. And I have two Razorwing Jet Fighters with Disintegrator Cannons in a Flayed Skull Flywing. So that's a little bit different than what I took to LVO, but it's from the tweaks that I made at LVO. That's essentially the list that I've been running right now for ranked events.
So what prompted those tweaks? Because I know I ran a very similar list to yours, and as soon as I heard about the magic boxes, the Talos came out, got replaced with, I think I ran 16 grotesques. And sure enough, when you make a bold move like that, it always blows up in my face. And every magic box that I played against was in my opponent's deployment zone. So it's completely
I think Talos are a lot more versatile than grotesques in a lot of different scenarios. They're very tough. Grotesques, though, fill that role of meat in a list. They are just meat. And they can go into ruins and clear out stuff when you need them to. So having a mix, I feel, is the most useful. The reason I changed, I basically took out the Scourge that I was running and the Succubus and put in the Flyers. And the main reason was I needed something to go out and touch someone on the other side of the board or hiding behind the ubiquitous wall of you can't shoot anything behind this wall. A Voidraven Bomber. After playing Deathwatch, I figured I needed something that I could fly on top of a unit full of storm shields and put a dent in it. And I feel having something like that, a tool like that at my disposal, would be very useful in that particular matchup, even though the Voidraven isn't the best in all the other matchups I might run into. It's very good at that matchup. And since then, I've noticed it's good against the Orc Looter matchup because looters can't grot shield the bomb. It's good against Eldar jet bikes that are Latok because they don't get minuses to be hit with a big bomb and things like that. So I've just been tweaking it, and it's a very efficient list that doesn't have a lot of sort of wiggle room at all.
Got it. Have you found with the Voidraven Bomber that maybe one is good, two is better, or are you still sticking to the two Razor Wings at this point?
I find Razor Wings are a lot better than Voidraven Bombers. They're more versatile in a take or come style list. If you're running an army that was sort of ETC style where you can pick and choose your matchups, then Voidraven Bombers are not terrible. However, I find that one Voidraven Bomber is enough because normally they drop a bomb and then die. And there's no point in having that happen to you three times. The Razor Wings at least stick around for a little longer.
Got it. You mentioned ETC. First of all, congratulations being named to the Canadian ETC team for, I believe, is your second time now, correct?
Yes, thank you. I'm the co-captain of the ETC Canadian team.
So one of the things I was listening to Gaz Jones, he's on the Wales ETC team, and he kind of jokes that this is kind of the game in the game. He's going to events to work on his ETC list, and he kind of puts on that filtered goggles that I'm looking at from an ETC standpoint, not necessarily to win the event. Especially here in North America, the continent, a lot of ITC events. Do you find that your ETC list isn't necessarily optimized for the missions and you just have to kind of play the game within the game?
I've tried. It is definitely something that comes up a lot, but I've tried to make a list that is useful in both formats. And the list that I'm running at the moment works well in both formats. The biggest thing that I have to accept, however, is not being able to shoehorn in a Doom Farseer or a Jink Jetbike Warlock, as normally Eldar is a strong enough book that it tends to have a whole army to itself, and I'm not able to use it at the ETC.
That was another question I had. It seems like the Doom and Jink is like mandatory for anything Eldari, whether it be Harlequin, Drukhari, or otherwise. And I was curious how you were coping without. So not to assume, but I'm guessing the Talos are making most use out of the Torturer's Craft stratagem.
Yeah, they do use that one quite often. It's nice, having units in the book that have rerolls, so I don't require as much. So the Archon gives rerolls hits and wounds to the Ravagers. I have the +1 to hit flyer strats with the jet fighters and the Voidraven. or the plus the flayed skull stratagem. Essentially, the Coven have a variety of different stratagems that really help them in combat with buffs like Urien. So I don't really need it. It's just adding Doom and Jink changes the math completely, and then it like throws me off. Because it would be too easy to add in Doom and Jink. Like Doom and Jink into a very nasty Dark Eldar list just takes it over 11.
Absolutely. It does help. It's pretty amazing. Funny, years ago it was always adding a sprinkling of Harlequins. They were actually part of the Dark Eldar Codex. Now with Drukhari, they're now a separate faction. You see it every now and then. It was a kind of a way to combat the Knight meta. You don't see it much anymore. What are your thoughts on the Harlequin book?
I've been playing the Harlequins on and off for the better part of, I believe, 4 months now. I've been doing a sort of a 20-game series. You know, it's something that I love doing is taking an army list concept or a new army, building a list, and then playing at least 20 games with that army while doing the fewest tweaks possible. And I've been finding the Harlequins to be a lot of fun. Very versatile book that has a lot of tools for the current meta, but they're not easy to play because they get into a few bad situations and then it kind of like falls apart like a house of cards. Joke's on you at that point.
Yeah, no kidding. I've heard a lot of people say it's terrain dependent, but I'm beginning to think, is it general dependent, or is it, like you said, it's just a difficult army to play?
It is a difficult army to play. A lot of folks I've seen like playing the army with the fast-moving transports and fusion pistols and things like that. I've mostly been relying more on the jet bikes, which I find is one of the best units in the book. The characters like the Death Jester with Curtain Fall, a Solitaire, the Troop Masters, which are very good, and also the Shadow Seers, which are some of the best psychers in the game. Combine that with one or two larger blocks of Harlequins. I feel like you have to have a mixed list to have the best results. And you need to have those big blocks of Harlequin infantry that are -1 to be wounded, that you can buff up easily with your psychic powers, in addition to fast-moving elements like the jet bikes or the Star Weavers, filled with their like little assassin units, right, that go in and murder things.
Makes sense. So a lot of things when we hear about the Canadian meta, we hear some of the larger events such as Attack X and the, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, is it Berry Bash or is it Bari? I always get that.
The Berry Bash. That's the event that I run every year.
Berry Bash. I think it was a Bloodbath.
Capital City Bloodbath.
That's the other one.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about, you're in the Toronto metro area, and tell us a little bit about the meta and do they interact as well? Because we here in the States have the similar, Ray and I here on the West Coast, very different from the DC area type meta.
So the meta here in the Toronto area is quite strong. Some of the best players in Canada reside within, a 50-mile radius of Toronto. And tournaments, even small little RTTs, sometimes get some really big names there, which is really awesome, because then you go to a small, four-round RTT and end up playing GT-level style competitive games, as the weekend progresses, which is awesome. There is a plethora of events. There's lots of game stores that jumped like headfirst into the ITC competitive track. And there's a lot of support, not only from the gamers towards the stores that are running events, like every weekend there's something to go to. It's also the gamers going and supporting a variety of different stores. So you see like the same sort of players, but in a whole bunch of different places. And it's really expanding that player base. And at the same time, it's had that effect of sort of raising the bar and raising the standard for everybody involved.
I'm glad you brought that up, because so we've run into that as well. I remember we ran our large event. It was 2 years ago. Of the 40-odd people that showed up, 17 of them were in the top 25 of the ITC that weekend. And I was like, oh, this is a stiff competition. You know, whoever's going to win this is going to earn it. And yep. I felt back because there were some, you know, some of our newer players who were like, hey, it's my first time going to a large a two-day event. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. So it's been brought up a few times that perhaps move away from an attendance-based scoring system to like a chess-based system where the, if you beat tougher opponents, you get a higher score, like an ELO-type scoring system.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think that chess style system would essentially be the best way to rank events and matchups. You know, like a player, you know, like Devin Swan or Jim Vessel, you know, going in and playing, you know, Joe Blow that just went to his first tournament, you know, it's not really worth the same amount of points. Like it is, but it shouldn't be worth the same amount of points as his as both of them facing off against each other and then one of them being victorious, or you know, TJ Lanigan playing against Devin or something. Like those big names knocking each other out should be worth more. However, it's definitely hard to keep track. And you know, the simple way of doing it is by introducing a variety of different styles of tournaments we found is very effective. So having some stores run Highlander events, you know, where you play 1500 points and you take one of everything and you can only use one codex and there's no mix, you know, and things like that. And even though they're ranked events, you know, it kind of attracts a different crowd, or it provides sort of like a different feel to the event that keeps the local players who are not accustomed to high level competitive play more in tune with like the vibe of what the tournament organizer wants to achieve.
It's interesting that the variety of events bring people. We kind of learned that lesson the hard way last season in our local area, in that we ran several ITC events and drew a lot of, you know, competitive players from our local neighboring states. And then some other guys through a power level, I think it was 50 power level, one codex, no super heavies, no Forge World event. And they got 38 players to show up for it. And I'm looking at the roster. I recognized two people in the room. I was like, who are all these people? Where did they come from? And why are they not interested in ITC events? So we learned a lesson to grow our local area by mixing it up a little bit. And that's kind of our plan for 2019 as well. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, you would think it's counterproductive, but it's a different crowd you're appealing to. And there's people play this game for a variety of reasons. You know, the competitive players that go to tournaments to win, you know, that's like probably a fraction of the total number of actual people who, you know, hang out with their friends every Saturday night or Friday night. And, you know, everybody shows up after the kids go to bed and you go down into the basement or out to the garage and you pull out the table and you're all just hanging out and chatting till 4 o'clock in the morning, just playing games, right? You know, and that casual type gamer, you know, is like the core of the hobby itself.
Is that something you can do in your local area with our vision of Canada, which is probably completely fabricated thanks to Hollywood? Is that it's, you know, it's like
we all live in igloos and we all have pet mooses. And and we drink Timmy's, okay? And our money is called the loony, okay? So just so everybody understands where we are.
And every breakfast is Tim Hortons, and every dinner is, was it poutine? I think it's the
poutine, yeah. Which for everybody is fries with cheese curds and gravy. It's the most delicious thing you'll ever eat in your life, as long as it's squeaky cheese, real cheese curds.
That's good to know. I've been tempted to have it. So they have it at the local hockey rink here in town. And every now and then, I need to get that. But I think they charge like $12, you know, stadium pricing. I'm like, yeah, I might try it somewhere else where it's a little cheaper before I do that.
Come to Canada, eh?
I mean, I've been to Toronto. I've been to Montreal. I love it. I haven't yet to make it to Vancouver, so I'd love to get to that area as well. And years ago, I had an opportunity to, it was a fly-by-night. I had tickets to a Flames game in Calgary against the Oilers. and they're my favorite hockey team, and it was just in and out. I really didn't get a chance to enjoy the city. So, yeah, if I was coming to Canada for like a Warhammer tour, where are some of the hot spots I need to go to?
Well, for Warhammer, first of all, you come to the Barry Bash, which happens the last weekend of February every year. And it'll be the 8th year next year.
Congratulations.
That's, so you should come to that.
Staying power like that is incredible. There, some game stores aren't open for 8 years. The fact you kept a tournament alive for that long, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it started off as a little, you know, 12-person RTT, and this year we had 84 players. Then you want to go to the Capital City Bloodbath that happens in Ottawa in August. That's a really good one. There's the Stud or Scrub, which happens in April on the 25th and 27th and 28th. Then the Canadian Tabletop, the CTTG, I believe, which happens in Ottawa in the beginning of May. Then the Canara Team Tournament. AKA, you come to Canada at any point in time, but Toronto area and Ottawa area has probably the most hot spots for events. We have guys that come up from Buffalo all the time to a lot of our events, like the Beef and Wing crew. You know, they drive up and spend a lot of time up here. And even people like Josh Death and other big names have started to come up this way since it's worth the trip. You know, the competition that you're getting is definitely raising that. We've raised the bar in Canada to the point where, like, we're on the map now, you know?
You said a key word there. It's worth the trip. And I think the new algorithm for ITC, which is like a closely guarded secret, it's like the seven herbs and spices from KFC. You know, no one knows what the formula is, but everybody's felt its effect. For example, you won an RTT about 2 weeks ago and picked up 187 points, which I think last year would have been worth like 105 points. And so it's...
Yep, 120.
Yeah, something like that. And... so clearly this formula is there to help the middle class, you know, those other tournaments. But it also means if my little tournament across town is giving me this many points, do I need to travel? So you said worth it making a trip. In your opinion, what does a tournament need to do to make it worth the trip?
A tournament has to... If you're going to make a long trip, first of all, I usually look for tournaments that have to be like 2 days and 5 to 6 rounds. You know, I'm willing to do like a day drive, like an hour, maybe even an hour and a half, almost 2 hour drive to go to a day event. That's, you know, 3 or 4 rounds. As long as I know I've been there before and I know that the tournament runs smoothly and on time. And another thing is if the terrain's good. You know, I like showing up to an event knowing that I'm going to have places to hide my infantry, or, you know, I'm going to be able to keep stuff out of line of sight and things like that. But those are usually the biggest things. Just the crowd, the atmosphere, the terrain, and this just the efficiency of it being run.
Sounds good. So what are your thoughts on that new algorithm out there? Seems, and does that affect your kind of overall game plan for the 2019 season?
Not really. Last year was my first competitive season on the ITC track, and all I did was go to every event I could, and I plan to do the same this year.
Seems a pretty straightforward strategy there. So if they want to hear more of your lovely wisdom, where can they find you?
So if you'd like to know more about the crazy antics I get up to, the main way to do that with the shameless plug is the YouTube channel, which is a Skardcast on YouTube. That's SKAREDCAST. And from there, you've got links to everything from my Instagram all the way to Twitter or even the Patreon page as well.
Sounds awesome. So Drukhari Codex kind of dodge the chapter approved cutoff this past fall. So we've got the...
At least for now.
Predictions for the spring, and what would you like to see happen to the Codex?
I think you open the Drukhari Codex, and you can make a list with any of the units in there that's fun and enjoyable to play. From a competitive standpoint, there are a few things that stand out that are sort of like auto takes. Disintegrator cannons, Grotesques or Talos. Namely, Prophets of Flesh, Grotesques, and Talos. Because if they didn't have a 4+ invulnerable save, they wouldn't be nearly as good. So usually it's just Prophets of Flesh. Cabal of the Black Heart for Vect. And then you can kind of sprinkle in your own choice there. So whether it's Mandrakes or Venoms or Scourge, which I'm really enjoying. I think the Drukhari Codex is in a good spot. But predictions, I could see them essentially seeing what happens at Adepticon. Like, they've been taking a look at the bigger events and kind of making a choice on in there. And I don't think Dark Eldar are in at a point where they would make any major sweeping changes to the Drukhari book. And I feel like we'll be safe. That's just my gut instinct telling me that. If I were to change anything, I would like them to give some love to the Hellions. I feel like it's the one unit in the book that I have essentially not used effectively in any game I've played them. And I've played every single unit in the Codex. I feel like they need a dodge save, like a jink save, an invulnerable save. But even if it's just a 6+, I feel that bringing that back, which is a rule from the old Codex for them, like old, not the last Codex, but the original Codex, yeah. I feel that would be nice to see again.
I agree with you there. It's, you know, as a witch unit, you know, as a witch cult unit, that both the Hellions and the Reavers are a little lackluster, especially, was it 2-3 years ago, you looked at, you know, Dark Eldar lists, it was almost all Reavers. And, you know, it was kind of that Reaver bomb back with the old cluster call trips and Hammer of Wrath, 2d6 Hammer of Wraths for everyone. And it just seems like they just need something. They just don't either hit that hard. They're not that durable. You mentioned the Hellions. They tend to, if they hit, they hit hard. I've seen a lot of players use them with Inari and Cult of Strife. So they get the swing again with Soul Burst and then play the stratagem to swing a third time. And, but if they don't hit, they're in trouble. It's just like...
Yeah. You kind of have to deep strike them. And at that point, they'll either make the charge or they won't. Right? And it's a bit of a gamble at that point. As for Reaver jet bikes, I have been fitting them into my list, but I've been using them differently, and I've had good success. I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about Reaver jet bikes and how they just keep them dirt cheap and just run them up and tie stuff up in combat. So I developed a list with a unit of jet bikes with no upgrades whatsoever, and I just put them on the edge of my deployment zone and went, you either kill them or they're going to be 30 inches up the board in your face. And it has been very effective.
So in terms of just tying up units, like, you know, shootier units that don't do well in close combat, or are you being aggressive with objectives with them?
Either or, but mostly it's the latent threat of them of being on the board, especially now with the new deployment style where you can counter deploy the enemy. With the chapter approved books and like half of the ITC like missions, at least now for the testing. But it's been nice to have your opponent deploy first, and then they get to choose whether to go first or second. You sort of if you want them to go first because you've counter deployed them so they can't really shoot you, you need to have something that will incentivize them to choose to go first, because you can counter deploy completely and then they say, well, now I'm going to go second, and you've essentially counter deployed yourself.
That's a good way of putting it. That's pretty funny. You mentioned earlier Prophets of Flesh in the statistics kind of play out. I would hazard you could do a good trivia question to any non-Drukhari player, name the other two covens in the book, and they probably couldn't.
That's true.
What is it they need to balance things out to make them a little more competitive?
Well, a 4+ invulnerable save is just way too good in the current meta at the moment. Not only that, but they get the best relic in the game, and they get the best warlord trait, which is extra command points, which is very, very strong, especially after they change the way command point regeneration works. And then the relic, which is the Vexator Mask, is probably one of the strongest relics in all of Warhammer 40,000 at the moment, you know, denying Overwatch and forcing an enemy unit to fight last, which really goes against a lot of the meta lists we're seeing right now with bully units that run up and get in your face really quickly and try and kill you. So the thing, they'd have to add something appealing to the Dark Creed or to the Covenant 12 to make sure that they would be taken. And I don't think that chapter traits really compare in any stretch of the imagination. Unless there's a big switch in the meta where their chapter traits just become incredibly powerful, like leadership debuffs and or having extra AP in close combat with your close combat weapons, which are pretty useless when it comes to coven stuff. At that point, you might as well be taking like witches or more cabal stuff. So sadly, that's the stage that it is. Like, the Prophets of Flesh is the only coven, sadly.
That's funny you mentioned.
Unless you take a Tantalus for fun and make it Dark Creed so it can shoot characters. But that's pretty much it.
When I first saw the stratagem, you can shoot characters. Like, I will shoot them with my Talos. Ooh, that's not good. You know, it's funny you mentioned the leadership bombs, and a lot of that was sort of a thing. You know, the freak show armies, you saw those a lot in a lot of Chakorin.
I played that a lot, yeah.
Interesting, in the Chaos, the Black Legion update that was on the Warhammer community page today, they mentioned they have an ability where you play the stratagem in the fight phase, and for every loss, every model taken counts as two for morale purposes. And that just leapt off the page where... Where's the Covenant of 12 for that? That would be amazing.
It forces your opponent to either spend the command points on making stuff fearless or making sure that they know they're going to lose a unit. And something like that, you know, it's all about the combos, and that would be really cool. I feel like that's going to be something that's going to take people by surprise, especially in a Horde meta.
I would totally agree there. So let's say Games Workshop turns back time and they do the horrible thing they did, and they think the Jukari goes the way of the squats and you're forced to play another faction. What would it be?
My Black Templars.
Ooh, tell us about that.
That's my original army. So I started playing Black Templars when I was 13 or 14. So yeah, I still have them. You know, they're like my original love, essentially. And I played them zealously for many, many years until I got heavy. I know. See, I got some good ones in there. So that's probably what I play. I still bring them out to play every once in a while, but they're definitely not like my army is a third edition army. You know, I haven't really updated them in a very long time. Like, I've added some Imperial Guard here or there, and I've got like a few things that I can use out of the Vigilist book or whatnot, and a Storm Raven. But I would just have to sort of get some more Primaris Marines and run some, because I love Primaris stuff, especially the new Shadow Spear stuff. It's pretty cool. So I'd just update them and play them, because I the Templars are awesome.
It's funny you mentioned that the Primaris stuff, mine again was here this past weekend. And pretty much this entire army is Primaris Marines, and you see them on the table, and it's just, that looks so cool. I never would have thought of that. You know, it's Space Marines looking cool again. I'm such been a Xenos and Traitor Legion fan, and I'm looking at them like, I could be tempted, but I won't be.
Primaris Marines are what we wanted for Marines forever. Like, as a person who played Marines from third edition myself, you know, seeing all the converted true scale Marines on every blog in existence, you know, and people converting them and making the legs longer and the guns bigger and everything. And now they've legitimately given us what we wanted. I couldn't be happier.
Pretty cool stuff there. So more stuff to come, and more stuff to come from us as well. We're going to take a quick break. After the break, we're going to go over your current ITC top 10 as well as upcoming ITC events. Be back in a few seconds. Welcome back after the break, and it's now time for your current ITC top 10 as they appear here. We are day after St. Patrick's Day, so those of you who celebrated, hope you had a good time and hope you did so responsibly. Meanwhile, your ITC top 10 looks something like this. In 10th place, Anthony D'Amore with 503 points holds down the 10th spot. 9th place, Bethany Taylor at 504. Simon Lean, who we just talked about earlier, moves up to 506 points, just a slim lead for 8th place. XR Exodar holds down a 2-point lead over Simon for 7th place.
That's actually Chris from, like, down the street from me. So that's his World of Warcraft name because he's a competitive World of Warcraft player.
Really? Okay, we're trying to figure that out.
But he's his name's Chris Rice, and it's funny because there was another Chris Rice on the ITC circuit, so that's why
he's on our team.
he decided to use his other name.
Well, we appreciate it because we were making fun of our Chris Wrights. We're like, hey, you got another side gig going you're not telling us about?
Yeah. So he plays hard Tyranids like Kraken Gene Stealers just through and through.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you clearing that up.
Yeah, no problem.
Because like yourself, you use Archon Scar, and a couple other players have been using pseudonyms as to some of the...
I changed it this season because Reese was getting confused every time he'd read my name. So now it's Ridvan Skari in little quotation marks. Martinez, which is my name.
Hey, it's all about the branding. I've noticed like the e-gamers are now doing that. They've got like, you know, screen names versus their real names and the like. And so I don't know, as our sport grows, we're here to see if that becomes a thing. So think of yourself as the originator of that. We'll hold you esteem.
Yeah, I'll take it. That's my thing.
he was the original. Anyway, sixth place, you have Michael Ralston. Not quite the most exciting name, but he's got 527 points and a solid 19-point lead over Chris Exodar. Fifth place, Daniel Hesters with another commanding lead of 540 points, and it gets jammed back up again. Fourth place, Michael Serapata with 554 points. Jim Vessel, apparently, I didn't know he was Canadian until this episode.
Yeah, he's out from Vancouver.
Okay, so he's out on the west side. So interesting. Have to keep an eye on him and how his meta is different from the Toronto.
But he comes down to Toronto a lot, though. So he's well versed in different meta forms.
Interesting. So Jim, you're holding down third place, a sizable lead, 23 points over Michael for third place. In second place, you have Richard Siegler with just another vaulting 70-point lead over Jim. And in first place, the pride of South Florida is none other than John Lennon, who won our event this previous weekend. 679.79 points with 4 events played so far this season. Use your top ITC player for the week. So, Ray, what events do we have coming up next weekend?
All right. We've got the ArmaCon 2019 Warhammer 40K event. And at a Thon Hotel Sandinus in Rogaland. The LWG presents the Bad Moon GT Series Heat 1 at the Bad Moon Cafe in England. Scottish Takeover 5 GT in Elgin, Scotland. And then Tau Tipping 2019 at Games Freak in Aberdeen, Washington.
Tau Tipping.
It's an awesome name. I'm just having done cow tipping myself, it makes me laugh to think of some bunch of people trying to push over a storm surge in the cow field. That'd just be so funny. Oh, that'd just be hilarious. Anyway. Scar, one more time, where can we find your work on the internet?
So you go deep into the bowels of Comora. You climb all the way to the top of the spire, surrounded by scourge, shadowy mandrakes. No, I'm just kidding. So you go to YouTube. It's Scardcast on YouTube. use the Googles. It works.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. A huge honor to have you on board. Again, please check out his page. Also support your local game store, whether or not it's been broken into or not. They need you to keep this community alive. So definitely reach out. Spend some money this week. There's some good new products coming out this weekend. If you'd like to hear more of us, and also check us out on our Facebook page. We'll have continued updates as more releases come out throughout the week. Also, leave us a review on iTunes and Spotify. We've expanded to multiple platforms. We can't fix the show if we don't know what's wrong. So let us know what we can do better next time around. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.